Hello, this is Robert Ambrose, KPTZ board president and host of Rhythm Connection. Like you, I'm waiting to hear Dr. Locke's weekly COVID-19 update. I depend on KPTZ to hear this crucial information because it allows me to better understand how the virus is affecting our community. It also helps me gauge when I might see my distant new grandson. You'd depend on KPTZ to hear Dr. Locke too, and KPTZ depends on you to keep broadcasting. Please consider clicking on the Donate Now button at kptz.org to give us your support for our efforts. Thank you.
KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates held as a virtual meeting during the COVID pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
The client sees on a regular basis. And so there's a lot of people that are, very elderly and very, have they have comorbidities that really make them a candidate for some bad outcomes and great candidates for vaccines that aren't willing to take it because their home healthcare worker is uninterested.
All right, well, that's a good segue into our weekly COVID update. Welcome Dr. Locke and Willie Bentz, and I'm not sure if Vicki is gonna be joining us for this portion as well, but welcome to Vicki as well. Are you going to start us off this morning, Dr. Locke?
Yes, I'm just checking to I got the sound on. Good morning. Just starting briefly with the numbers. It looks like nationally, we have definitely crested on the fourth wave. Case rates are down 30% nationally. And hospitalizations and death rates are dropping as well. And a lot of this reflects the diminishing cases in these states that were hit really hard by the fourth wave, like Minnesota and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Illinois. Unfortunately, we're not seeing those kind of drops yet in Washington state. We think they're coming, but we're not there. Currently, Washington's actually has the 10th highest COVID rate in the country. It's really the highest we've been relative to other states. But we have seen a slight decrease, a 4% decrease in case rates in Washington in the last 2 weeks. But hospitalizations are still increasing, up 7%, and deaths have increased by 22% over the last 2 weeks. So we're really not over the crest of the fourth wave, but we think it's coming. And sometime in the middle to later part of the month. This kind of cresting is the main reason that the governor held off on his roadmap to recovery plan, because as of last week, about 10 counties would have had to step back from phase three to phase two just based on their numbers, including Kitsap County. However, that program is on pause, and we're not really sure what's going to happen after 2 weeks. Statewide, the case rate is about 250 per 100,000. That's very close to what the King County rate is right now. Jefferson County, in stark contrast, is now the second lowest case in terms of, or county in terms of COVID activity. Second only to Wauquiakum County. So our rate for the last 2 weeks has held stable. It's exactly the same as it was in the previous rate at 62.7 per 100,000. And that represents 20 cases over the last 2 weeks. Significantly, at least three of these cases are in children, are in young children, all household contacts of known cases. And we think that's going to be the shape of things to come, is that as we move into, as the variants, the California variants and the UK variant become the predominant forms of coronavirus, we'll see higher attack rates in households. And attack rate is a term we use for the percentage of people who get infected when exposed. So when someone in the household gets the infection and the infection is more transmissible, we expect more people in that household to become infected, including children. And now we're starting to see some evidence of that. Clallam County has been noticing a trend of increasing pediatric cases for the last month or so, but we're now starting to see that as well. Rates in Clallam are higher than Jefferson, but significantly lower than statewide. So Clallam, despite three big outbreaks associated with large gatherings, has held stable at about 108 cases per 100,000. Kitsap is the highest in our region, with on the state dashboards, they're over 200 cases, but on their own, they're more updated. They're just slightly below that at 196 per 100,000. And then in the vaccination front, things are starting to slow down nationally. We reached a peak of vaccinations nationally in mid-April at about 3.5 million per day. Now it's slowed to about 2 million a day, which is still a very significant number, but not what we would like. Nationwide, about a third of the US population is now fully vaccinated, and about 46% have had their first dose. And Washington State ranks about 17th among the states in terms of vaccination levels. So we have 55% of our population has received a first dose, and actually a little lower than the national average, 32.5%, a little under a third are fully vaccinated. In Jefferson County, it's much higher. We actually lead the state in terms of fully vaccinated population. We're the first county that kind of went over the 50% mark in terms of being fully vaccinated. We're actually the only one currently that is above 50%. And of the total population, 60%, almost 61% have had their first dose. And then if you look at the eligible population, which is those 16 and older, it's actually 68.2% of people over the age of 16 have had their first dose, and 57.2% are fully vaccinated. So those are really impressive numbers, and I think the credit goes to Jefferson Healthcare and our pharmacies and DEM and all these groups that have been working very aggressively from as soon as the vaccines became available. And that's what it takes to get to these kind of numbers. So in Washington State, we're definitely at the inflection point that we've been long expecting, and that is where supply and demand come into equilibrium, and eventually supply exceeds demand. So the vaccine is readily available across the state. Anyone who wants it can get it in same day appointments or increasingly walk-in visits without appointments. And we're sort of looking at the unvaccinated now as falling into one of three groups. So there's the group that people who want the vaccine, but have not yet been able to get it. And this may be because they're homebound, or because of their work schedules, or it might be a geographic issue. They live in remote areas of the county. So this is a group we really want to target and do the best we possibly can on people who want to get vaccinated, but do not currently have access. And then the second group we're looking at are the true vaccine hesitant. They've taken a wait and see attitude. They're not so sure about safety or side effect issues. They're not so sure that the personal benefit of the vaccine really justifies the effort to get vaccinated. And this is the group we work on with messaging and trying to make the case that the risks of the disease are enormously greater than the risks of the vaccine. And then the final group are those that are just philosophically opposed to vaccines in general, or have some specific opposition to this vaccine. And a lot of times that falls along political, ideologic dividing lines. And this is a group we will probably not make any progress with. So we're really focusing on the access issue and the hesitant issue. But our delivery system is transitioning. The last scheduled drive-through first dose clinic at Jefferson Healthcare will be next Saturday on the 15th. It'll be a Pfizer clinic targeted to teens. And although anyone's welcome to schedule at it, there'll be another first dose clinic at Jefferson Healthcare this week as well. And then the public hospital district, they'll spend the next 3 to 4 weeks just finishing up second doses on the first doses they've given. And then they're transitioning to making the vaccine more available in their clinics as just part of regular medical care. The pharmacies will continue to have it available. We have a few more scheduled DEM mass vaccination clinics. We'll be back to Chimicum High School on the 15th and the 22nd to complete second doses. And we'll also be offering the one dose Janssen, otherwise known as J&J vaccine on those days, the 15th and the 22nd. We have arranged some mobile visits to the homebound. A state contractor is doing this for us. We provide the vaccine, but they have a team that can go house to house. So we've been doing that. We're looking for pop-up opportunities around the county, but the logistics is challenging because as I'm sure I've reported many times before, it's just the nature of this vaccine is it comes in multi-dose vials, and we don't want to waste vaccine. So we can't, we don't have single dose vials available, and we probably won't for a while. And the reason is the shortage of glass, the special quality glass that you make vials out of. There's a huge worldwide demand for that, and there's just not enough of this kind of glass available to make single dose vials, at least in the near term. So we're with the growing hesitancy and the slowing of the vaccine rollout in the U.S., people are starting to revise their projections about how long it's going to take to really get the pandemic under good control. We see that things will drop off in terms of disease activity over the summer. The summer and outdoor activity is very much in our favor, but now we're looking at optimistic projections are we might get to 70% of Americans having a first dose by the 4th of July or so. And we probably will continue to have outbreaks among the unvaccinated throughout the summer. There'll be clusters, but it won't have the kind of impacts on hospitals or healthcare delivery systems that past outbreaks have had. And frankly, we'll be doing less and less to try to control that. Gatherings will increase, masking standards will be relaxed, things will get back to normal. But a consequence of all of that is that the risk for the unvaccinated will go up, because all of these things we're doing now in terms of restrictions are in many ways protecting the unvaccinated from exposure. So as those protections lessen, the risks unfortunately will increase. And then I'd highlight just one final thing in terms of updates, and it hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but it is significant. And that is finally the World Health Organization and the CDC have come around to officially acknowledging that that COVID-19 is an airborne infection. And in fact, airborne transmission appears to be the predominant method of spread. This realization has been a long time coming, because it's hard to document these things. It has huge ramifications if in order to prevent transmission, we have to do a lot of indoor control measures, but that's the reality of the infection. We also know now that airborne transmission doesn't just involve these very small 5 micron particles, but it can be particle sizes up to 100 microns, which are things that are just routinely emitted when we speak and shout and sing and do all these kind of indoor activities. One of the consequences of this is you'll be seeing a lot more attention on indoor risk factors, because that's really where the threat is. The good news about airborne transmission is it just underscores the reason why doing anything outdoors is enormously safer than doing things indoors. Whereas we think indoor activity is now relatively safe for the vaccinated, it's not going to be safe for some time for the unvaccinated, in that the consequence of airborne spread is you don't necessarily, distancing yourself by 6 feet does not necessarily protect you from airborne spread. Airborne spread can get into air currents and move around indoor spaces. We now even have documentation of COVID-19 infection moving from room to room. So people who are in rooms where there isn't even an infected person can get infected. Fortunately, that's rare, but it happens. So I'll leave that as my update report. And then we have a bumper crop of KPTZ questions this week, but I'll turn it over to the commissioners before that.
I just have one sort of fun thing I heard on NPR this morning. It was Erie County, Pennsylvania, which contains Buffalo, New York, so quite a bit of population there, but they're doing pop-up vaccination clinics at brew pubs. So there's a way to access a segment of the population that normally works all day and gets off work, and we can meet them at the brew pub. Anyway, so just an idea. I thought it was an interesting story, and they were having quite a bit of success with accessing people who weren't able to logistically get it in their life to get their vaccine and were still interested in getting it. So just a sharing.
Yeah, I could see myself volunteering for that event as a brew pub vaccinator. It's got its appeals.
Dr. Lott, can you give us an update on the 12 to 15 year olds? What's expected at this point?
Yeah, we think that FDA approval and ACIP endorsement of the Pfizer vaccine for 12 to 15 year olds is imminent. Probably Wednesday of this week is what people are saying. And it will likely be implemented shortly after that. So by next weekend, I don't know, I guess we call them tweens, tweens and young teens will be eligible. And we have Pfizer vaccine. We've got an ample supply, actually, of Pfizer vaccine in Jefferson County. So the hospital's already working on plans to vaccinate 12 to 15 year olds. That they're certainly eligible. If it's approved by next Saturday, it could happen that soon. Otherwise, we'll come up with some alternate strategies. It's not a huge group population-wise. Nationally, I just saw an estimate, there's about 20 million Americans who fall into that age group. It's probably around 1,000 in Jefferson County at the most. We don't have an accurate number yet, but we're eager to vaccinate those kids, especially before they return to school next year. This could really be a game changer for high school next year if we can get everyone vaccinated.
You're not the only ones who are eager. At least two of us here with 12 to 15 year olds are right there with you. Is there also a state approval process or something? I've heard there could be a delay with a state approval.
There's not a state approval, but there is this Western Group review body that has been independently been looking at vaccine safety data as a way of building public confidence. But they have been working really quickly. So typically they do their review on the same day that the ACIP does. And so they haven't created any real delays. When the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices weighs in on that will really be the final step. And we'd expect we could start administering it, you know, within a day or two after that.
Great news. Thank you. Greg?
I just follow up, curious about, I guess, and maybe this will be addressed more by Willie, but just the management of the Pfizer as we transition to DEM and such. That's the super cooled one, right? And thinking about pop-up clinics for kids and everything, and what's the procedure? Do you have to really know how many you're going to have if you take it out of that super cold environment down to, you know, Quilcene School or what have you for a 12 to 15 cohort?
It's manageable. The super cold, ultra cold is just for long-term storage. And then you can keep it about 6 months at minus 80 degrees. Then you can keep it for a month at a regular refrigerator freezer temperature. At the point you thaw it in a refrigerator, then you have to use it within a matter of days. And then once you reconstitute it, so the Pfizer vaccine has to be mixed with a diluent. And at that point, the clock really starts ticking. I think it might have been lengthened just a bit, but once you reconstitute it, you have about 6 hours to use the six dose vial.
Great. And then last question is, can you remind us the difference between an endemic situation and a pandemic? I mean, I'm hearing these concerning things about, you know, we just might not reach herd immunity as a country, and wondering, you know, if that takes place, is this going to be a continuation of the pandemic, or is it going to be like the flu? What's your crystal ball like?
Yeah, I think a pandemic by definition is a global epidemic. And then an epidemic is when you're having widespread distribution within a population. And then an endemic is when the infection never really goes away and it just stays and clusters that smolder and then burst into activity when conditions are right. And at this point, almost everyone believes that SARS-CoV-2 will become endemic in the US, much like influenza. And we'll get seasonal outbreaks, probably similar to influenza in that they correlate with these the fall and winter, where respiratory viruses, they spread more easily indoors. Also the low humidity of winter is favorable for the virus, virus survival. But that's what we see is happening. And unlike influenza, because we still have a lot of susceptible people in the population, that you know we'll continue to see outbreaks. If we don't reach our vaccination targets in the US, it just means that we'll have more outbreak activity. But it doesn't justify the kind of economic restrictions and business restrictions that we're currently employing. I'd be almost certain that those are going to go away, that gatherings will return to full size. Business restaurants, businesses will operate at full capacity. Although there likely will be differences based on your vaccination status. So there will be gatherings or events you can only go to if you're fully vaccinated. That's how I see those kind of changes occurring, is that they're going to be differences as who can travel and who can do certain things based on whether they're susceptible to COVID or not.
You can only go into the mosh pit if you're vaccinated, right?
Yes, if you're so inclined, yes.
All right, should we move to KPTZ questions?
Yes, and I hesitate to even say, it asked me to comment on the situation in India, I urge people to really pay attention to that, because it's both catastrophic and preventable. India had a year to prevent this, and it's a catastrophe of failed leadership. And we've not been immune to that in the US either. We're the second worst country in terms of outbreaks and disease activity and death rates proportionally. And Brazil is number three, and all have had extraordinarily bad leadership for the bulk of the pandemic. A couple questions were sort of about family visits, and I think good ones. And one is, we're considering a family gathering in late summer, be a long weekend, both indoors and out. Although all adults will be fully vaccinated, but probably not the kids. What safety precautions should we plan to use? And I'd say the outlook for these kind of gatherings is really good for the mid to late summer. I would just recommend you want to exclude people who are sick or have been recently exposed to known cases. People who fall into those categories really should not be attending family gatherings. But other than that, these kind of gatherings with fully vaccinated adults can go on without masking or distancing or many restrictions at all. And if you have participants who do have symptoms or who have recently traveled or been exposed, testing, especially home testing, will become increasingly available. Then there was a question, is how do we safely have a family visit if unvaccinated family members travel distances to connect with those we miss so much? And that's a situation for the unvaccinated who travel, that's a good use for getting tested 3 to 5 days after after your arrival. And then quarantining for a week or until you know the test results. That will give you a good measure of protection. And then during that period, really try to focus on outdoor gatherings and indoor masking. There's a question asking about how many healthcare workers are fully vaccinated in Jefferson County, particularly dentists and their staff. We don't have that kind of data. We're trying to get it. It's actually difficult to get, but I can say it's not what we want it to be. It's certainly in the studies that have been done, it's regularly less than 80%. And in some studies of long-term care facilities, it's only about 50% of staff are fully vaccinated. So we're really paying a price for vaccine hesitancy in those settings. And we may be seeing the day where vaccination becomes mandatory in certain occupational settings. It will only happen after the vaccines are fully approved by the FDA, but that's going to happen this summer. Probably by midsummer, the Pfizer vaccine will be fully approved and the Moderna vaccine shortly after that. So vaccine mandates may be coming. And then there was a related question asking, is it okay to ask your dentist if they have been vaccinated and the support staff? And even if you think the dental staff is using good protocols, and you might get different answers to this, but I would say, yes, that's a reasonable question to ask someone because it impacts your personal safety. So it's not just idle curiosity, it affects your health. Now, obviously, no one has to answer that question if they don't want to. And I'd reassure people, if you are fully vaccinated and your dental or medical practitioners are using good infection control, masking, distancing, the other kinds of things, you needn't be afraid of getting services from them, even if they're unvaccinated. Your vaccination and the protective measures should really give you an adequate margin of safety. And then there was a question saying, I'm an older, fully vaccinated adult with younger female offspring. I'm struggling with their hesitancy to get vaccinated. I'm anxious to have them visit, but am concerned about my safety. And my advice there is, don't give up. This is an ongoing conversation. It requires engagement, understanding the specifics of the hesitancy, and really people are more motivated by emphasizing the positive rather than the negative. It's not fear of disease is actually not a very good motivator, but people looking at the greater options they'll have if they're vaccinated, and the safety factor. Which now that we've vaccinated hundreds of millions of people in the United States, we have very solid safety data on these vaccines, and especially with the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, they're among the safest vaccines that have ever been developed. No one can say about, people raise the question, well, what about 5 years or 10 years from now? And of course, we can't know that. Kind of thing at this point in time. But we know from other vaccines don't have long-term adverse side effects. A vaccine's interaction with your body is a very short-term effect, measured in days or at most a week. And then it's gone. And all that persists is your body's immunologic memory of whatever you've been exposed to. And that's a process we're doing every day with thousands of different pathogens. That's just how our immune system works. So we have no reason to believe, we have solid reason to believe that these vaccines are very safe in the short term, and we have no good reason to believe that there would be any adverse effects in the long term. Two more questions. When should a person who's had COVID-19 and recovered get vaccinated? You always want to wait at least 2 weeks after your symptom onset, but you don't have to be in a big hurry because you probably are protected against reinfection for at least 3 months. I recommend people who have had COVID-19 wait a month and then get vaccinated. We do recommend to get the full two-dose vaccination, although there is some pretty solid research that says if you have COVID-19 and one vaccination, that gives you protection equivalent to if you had a two-dose vaccine series. But we do know it's safe to get both doses, even if you've already had COVID-19. And then the final question asks about research done on women's menstrual cycle disturbances. And this is one of the latest things that's circulating now. And it's as a way of kind of scaring women. There is not good data on this in that menstrual cycle irregularities were not tracked as part of the vaccine safety trials. So there are studies looking into that. It's not implausible that you could have short-term changes in menstrual cycles from a vaccine, and that the reproductive system, especially the uterus, is very much part of the immune system and can react to things that stimulate the immune system. But we have absolutely no reason to believe that there would be any long-term changes, and we have no evidence of any kind of fertility changes. And the important point there is when considering vaccination and fertility, what we do know is the risk of getting COVID-19 in pregnancy or risk of complications is dramatically increased. It's a 20-time increase in risk if you're pregnant and have COVID-19. So that's, if you're considering getting pregnant, getting vaccinated now is exactly the thing to do. If you are pregnant, we still recommend you get vaccinated while pregnant because the benefits are so much greater than the risk. And that's it for the questions. And Willie's got a question.
Can I just say, how is it that I'm almost 47 years old and have never heard that the uterus is part of the immune response? That's fascinating.
Yeah, any places in our body where, you know, infections can invade our system generally have a robust part of the immune system there protecting us.
Wow, fascinating. Okay, welcome, Willie.
Hey, thank you. And so for us, you know, we've alluded to the ground game a couple of times, and that's really continued to be our focus with some of these smaller clinics. And this week is going to be a busy week for us. Tomorrow, we'll have a team of vaccinators first at Chimacum School District in the morning, and then they'll be heading down to Quilcene for the afternoon for two small clinics. I'm using the Pfizer vaccine specifically for 16 and 17-year-olds within those school districts. So we haven't gotten a ton of signups quite yet. If you're a 16 or 17-year-old student at one of those schools, you've gotten some information on how to sign up, please do. Again, we'll be in Chimacum in the morning, Quilcene in the afternoon. And again, that's targeted at those students so they can have, again, the vaccine brought to them if they haven't had a chance to grab it already. And hopefully we'll help inspire some slight sense of normalcy around graduation time through the summer. So again, we'll be in Chimacum morning, Quilcene afternoon tomorrow. Then later this week, we've partnered with the State Department of Health and one of their mobile vaccination teams. They've been working with OLECAP, with Bayside and Dove House. And Thursday and Friday, they'll be out at a few of those locations, including the Legion Shelter, the Fairgrounds, et cetera, to deliver some vaccine to our community's homeless population. Those will be, folks will be given the option of which vaccine they want at those clinics. It'll be Moderna for some folks who are okay with the two-dose vaccine series. And then for folks who'd rather just get the one and done, we're offering Johnson & Johnson. But again, some of those, some of the members serviced by those organizations fall into that potential risk category for Johnson & Johnson. So we wanted to make sure to give them the options. So you'll have a kind of a menu of options depending on what you think is going to work best for you. So that's taking place Thursday and Friday. Finally, leading into Saturday, we'll be in the morning wrapping up a vaccine series using Moderna for folks who got their first dose about a month ago at the Chimicum School District multipurpose room. And then tying into to my question, which I'm honored to finally have a KPTZ question again after a couple of weeks with a break, we'll be offering Johnson & Johnson as a walk-in availability for the first time. So that'll take place in the afternoon from 1 o'clock till 2:30. We might go a little bit longer, so a relatively brief window. Appointments are encouraged, but not necessary. Again, if you wanna just swing by, grab your single dose and be done with it, we're offering that for the first time. And the KPTZ question was, you know, why aren't we doing that? Why haven't we been doing that already? And that's because we're trying to be so careful about potential vaccine wastage. You know, some of these vaccines, they come in a 5-dose vial, others in a 10. And we don't want to, you know, turn someone down. But then again, if we open up a vaccine and we, you know, deliver it to that one person, then we have to use 4 to 9 more. And there was a lot of concern about, again, vaccine wastage early on, especially as we were vaccinating really high risk populations. So, you know, wasting a single dose, you know, was potentially a very, you know, we really wanted to avoid that at all costs. So now the CDC has actually issued some guidance that vaccine wastage it's still a big deal. We're still going for zero waste if at all possible, but getting shots into arms more than anything is a priority now. So we'll be offering that walk-in service this Saturday. We'll be doing it again for our next second dose series in the morning. And then we'll have another walk-in availability on Saturday the 22nd as well. From there, moving forward, again, we're looking at a lot of these smaller clinics. We're going to be looking at obviously the 12 to 15 year olds as soon as that becomes available. We have heard and we've been talking about that internally, the shot for a shot, some folks call it, or the brew pub type model. We've been talking about that a little bit. Honestly, one of our next priorities though is going to be some sort of clinic on a Sunday. Specifically, we're going to be talking to some of the faith-based leaders in the community after the success of the St. Mary's Clinic. We've identified a Sunday clinic as an area of need in this county, with most of our vaccine clinics taking place either on a weekday or on a Saturday. We've heard some from folks who, you know, they work two jobs. They have kids in school who they've been helping with remote and distance learning. And Sunday is the day, you know, they might go to church in the morning and then they run all their errands in the afternoon. So we're going to be targeting a Sunday pop-up here relatively soon. We've talked with, you know, like the Chamber and Main Street about potentially something downtown. So employees of those businesses along Water Street can hop out on their lunch break and, you know, walk in and grab their vaccination that way. Although in doing some kind of preliminary surveying with those folks, most of the business owners downtown had reported that most of their employees who wanted the vaccine have already been able to get it. They really praised Jefferson Healthcare's drive-in service as being really, you know, enabling that. So that wasn't quite as urgent of a need as we initially thought, but we'll still be targeting something down there. And then, yeah, we'll be talking to a few of the local, you know, purveyors of fine beverages about a potential partnership opportunity down the line. We're also, you know, we want to have these make these kind of fun, partner with different events, but we're still a little bit concerned with, you know, a vaccine clinic at these, you know, kind of larger gatherings still as we're waiting for that fourth wave to crest. So again, we're looking at these, more information to come. We kind of appreciate everyone's patience as we, you know, we call them pop-ups for a reason. They kind of pop up on a couple of weeks' notice as supply becomes available, as we identify these needs. So we have our schedule out for the next 2 weeks. Again, Jefferson Healthcare will be wrapping up their drive-through services here relatively soon. But, you know, we have two clinics. The pharmacies have plenty of appointments available. Again, if you are having trouble navigating the vaccine appointment infrastructure and where you can get walk-ins and where you can't, please give us a call, 344-9791, and one of our volunteers will walk you through the process and help you get vaccinated. So that's it for me, barring any questions.
Great. Any questions for Willie?
Quick comment. Thanks a lot for working on that, the congregate population. I'm really glad they're being addressed this week, and looking forward to my second shot in Chimicum on Saturday. So
we'll see you there. And again, full credit to DOH for helping us with some of these mobile pop-ups. And it's a team from Bird's Eye Medical out of Tacoma who's helping us along with this. So give them a shout out. Really thank them for their help.
I just really appreciate how much you're trying to meet people where they're at. And I know it's harder work to vaccinate a relatively small number of people, but we're hearing that's what we need to do. So appreciate that. And we'll say at 11:30, we're going to be talking with Vicki Kirkpatrick, and I think Dr. Locke's able to join us for most of that to talk about the transition of services. And I won't get the wording quite right. Dr. Locke, you sent it to me, the increasing role that public health and emergency management will be playing in vaccinations. So join us if you'd like to hear about more about that. Anything else for Willie or Dr. Locke? All right. Well, thank you very much. As always, we're lucky to still get weekly reports. I know at some point you might say, hey, should we go to bi-weekly? And we can have that conversation when it's time, but really appreciate your time.
Or maybe I can announce in advance, May 31st, I plan to be gone. If you're going to have that a meeting, May 30th is actually my birthday, so I'm taking that weekend off.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Our meeting is on Tuesday, June 1st that week, Dr. Locke.
Oh, okay. Actually, I could be back by then. I think I'm coming back the 31st.
We will check in on schedule then. Okay. Thank you, everyone. We have anyone need a bio break before we go on with our agenda? Are we doing okay? All right. Let's
doing okay.
Charge on right on schedule. Look at that.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.
And just a reminder of the recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. And again, thank you for listening. Thank you to Dr. Locke and Willie Bence and the commissioners. Thank you all.